This episode of Section D was first broadcast on the 29th of July 2014 on Monocle 24. Section D is brought to you in association with Grundig. Hello and welcome to Section D, the hour we devote to the world of design each week here on Monocle 24. I'm your host, Tom Morris. Coming up today, Section D tells the story of how Lisbon hopes to house its citizens amidst a backdrop of belt tightening and the legacy of the city's historic housing programmes. In a special one-hour report, Alid John examines the initiatives pursued by City Hall and a collective of international universities to assess how the local population can take the design of their home into their own hands. That's all here on this special edition of Section D on Monocle 24, starting right now.
We have 500,000 in the center, Lisbon Castle. We have 2.5 million around the Lisbon center. It's a really segmented city, and you don't get the real thing about the greater Lisbon just going to Lisbon Castle.
We know that the city and the city neighborhoods and the people who live there were not in the same page on the overall city. So we want to try to understand where are the areas, more deprived areas on social, economical, environmental and urbanistic situations.
I think the main challenge for us is to make the city as equal as possible in different kind of public uses, in the public spaces.
Lisbon's design, the fabric of the historic city, the housing surrounding the city centre and the sprawl beyond, tells the story of a busy recent history. In the last 100 years, it has witnessed the founding of the Estado Novo, industrialisation, a dictatorial regime's life and its demise with the revolution of 1974 and the years of adjustment that followed.
E na verdade, já lhe perdi a conta. É duplo prazer para mim ser o primeiro aqui a vir aqui. Não vinha chefe de Estado há 62 anos. 62 anos.
Housing has played a huge part in the city's political life, with citywide projects of clearing, rehousing and mass development over the last 5 decades, slicing the city into composite communities and segmented societies. Now emerging from the impact of the economic recession, Lisbon City Hall is endeavouring to empower those communities grouped by class through initiatives that include self-starting the redesign of their houses.
Paga-se, não se paga consultas de medicina geral, mas paga-se as outras consultas de especialidade.
I'm here in Lisbon with a coalition of international university departments brought together through the EU-funded OiConet Collective, a multidisciplinary housing research body coordinated by Leandro Madrazo Ogudin of Barcelona's La Salle School.
OiConet is just focusing on the topic of housing studies. Erasmus network projects have a topic to explore how to innovate the ways we teach about that particular topic. And in our case, we are exploring housing at a global level, so not only in Europe, but also outside Europe. So we're interested to know how the forms of living are changing nowadays in across Europe. But we're also interested, and this is the pedagogic part of it, in how to teach students these changes that are undergoing at the moment and how this affects the way we learn and teach architecture with regard to housing.
We're in Portugal for the first of 3 annual international workshops to examine the state of urban design and housing here in Lisbon through the prisms of 2 contrasting areas, the informality of Bairro da Liberdade and the formalised mass housing of Portela de Sacavém.
I am the councillor of housing and local development in the city of Lisbon.
The OiConet workshop, held at the University Institute of Lisbon, begins with a keynote speech by City Hall Councillor for Housing and Urban Development, Paulo Marques.
In the first years of the Republic, that industrialization made people come from different parts of the country to install in Lisbon, to work in the factories and in the small or bigger mills. So the owners of the mills constructed some smaller than bigger neighborhoods where people were living, but the patterns of living were really, really low. It were very small houses, sometimes with no community spaces, only with bedrooms or kitchens and bathrooms. They were really, really small houses. Then, in the final 20s until the 40s, we had economic houses or demountable houses. You will see in the pictures. They were small houses, bigger than the mill neighborhoods, but always thinking about people that were coming from countryside to urban cities, almost like a small village inside the city. And these were the for the poor families.
The right to housing was enshrined in the constitution contrived after the dictatorial regime of Antonio de Oliveira Salazar. Housing became more than ever a mechanism of politics. The regime under Salazar's Estado Novo, or New State, avoided mass housing projects for fear they would inspire collective revolt, and the ideal of the one-floor standalone family home with a garden often prevailed in developments around the city. Meanwhile, the change wrought on the city and its segmented communities over the last five decades has included the clearing of its slums, dominant in the periphery of central Lisbon, and the construction of mass housing on the periphery where land was available. Housing and its political potency is still an issue that pervades the local agenda, as City Councillor Paula Marx tells me in her office.
Hi, how are you?
Hi.
Nice
to meet you.
It's a very hard job. I could make a quote saying it's a hard job, but someone has to do it. But it's a hard job, but it's a very interesting, and it's a job that motivates me a lot. I was working with a previous councillor in this area, and my specific area was working with the municipal neighbourhoods and promoting community groups, reflection community groups, where people from the neighborhoods, people from the local civil parish, that is a small government of the city, and people from the municipality service could be together thinking and even, if necessary, transforming some plans that we had for the bigger territories. So it's a job and it's a team that it's my area since I was a young girl. As an activist, the housing, the public spaces, the participation of people in planning the city and in planning transformations that can be directly related to their own living. So that was what I was doing in the past 4 years, and now I was elected to continue this work in a different way, of course, because we are different people.
So what are the main challenges for you as a councillor looking specifically at housing and local development? What are the main challenges for you with regard to Lisbon?
Lisbon is a very multiply living city. So you have very different kinds of people that live in the city. You have different kinds of cities inside the same city. So what happened is that in the 60s and in the 70s, we constructed mass housing, not in the center of the city, but in the periphery. So inside the city, but in the periphery of the city. Of course, because there were land to build. So we have been constructing mass housing in Lisbon, and it was very important because we had lots of people that were living in or demountable houses or very, very poor houses or houses that we couldn't call it houses. So
slums or shanty towns.
We had lots of slums outside Lisbon, but in the limit of Lisbon, and we have made in the 90s a very big effort to make those persons having a decent and a dignified house. The problem is that we constructed in mass and in a very big scale. So my big challenge nowadays is how to develop those communities that have higher concentration of people that have cumulative lacks in income, in scolarity, some destructed family issues. So you have a big concentration of people with some social issues. I don't want to call them problems because I think language is very important, and we call those areas intervention priority areas for the city hall and not critical neighborhoods or dangerous neighborhoods as sometimes the academic and the politicians call those neighborhoods. So this was one of our first challenge in the past, and we continue to have that challenge and to work. People become more empowered in those communities, not forgetting that the communities have lots of concentration of social issues, and nowadays the income of the families are very, very low. So how do we work with people for not having a regression about the quality of life and the dignifying life that they have conquered since the 90s? This one is one of the challenge. The other one is how to make people organize themselves to participate with us in orientation of what the physical and the social transformation that we have to do in those neighborhoods.
Paolo's City Hall colleague and architect Miguel Brito coordinates City Hall's so-called BIPZIP initiatives for neighborhoods and areas of priority intervention, social outreach projects that call for its citizens to motivate themselves to bring about change.
We try to go to the citizens and to some of the areas that we know that's bad shape and try to work with them and to understand what are the problems. And one of the things that was important, it was a mentality change, almost in the semantic of it. It was a little...
It's your perception then?
Yes, the perception of the city and the people themselves that live in deprived areas. And we'd like to pinpoint not the critical image or the bad image with the words. And we want to understand that areas are needing for priority intervention from the public's governance. So it was priority intervention areas or neighborhoods that was the main concept of the starting of the work.
Really complex issue, obviously. Let's begin by looking at exactly what intervention can manifest itself as. Is it purely from the public sector? Can it come from the private sector as well? If you could outline the initiatives in detail, just briefly, if you could.
The first point is to identify in the city these areas with the help of the citizens themselves, and to promote a reflection, internal discussion in the city hall, in the decision makers and in all the sectors, the technical sectors of the city hall, to understand a little bit what is happening and how can we promote that initiative. But the main idea is to construct a kind of a tool to bring the communities and the citizens to making the changes themselves, small changes, small steps, but try to promote and activate and ignite in all the 67 neighborhoods, small projects, but with big changes and with big mentality change.
But what are the changes that you're talking about? Are we talking specifically design changes or more societal changes? Changes which bring people together?
Yes, it's an open mainframe for ideas, for projects. So you can have physical changes, public spaces like gardens, you can have all kinds of situations, but you also can have social and service community service projects. So it goes to the diagnose and goes to the focus of the local problem. So if the important thing to a community is to help the young with the educational problems, the projects that emerge will be an answer to that. But in other cases, if you have housing problems, if you have public space difficulties, the projects will go to that. They are small projects, 50,000 euros. So it's only to activate partnerships, and it's important because these projects are always made by local organizations in partnership. So the main thing, we want to activate the community through partnerships and to create a network of response so beyond the project itself.
It's a process of identifying specific problems in various areas and then identifying how a sort of collaborative solution can work with partnerships to target that. And it doesn't specifically have to be a design issue or an architectural issue. It can be anything, in fact.
Yes. You can have cultural projects as a social response to a community to activate something, to bring other citizens to a neighborhood and to open it to the city. It's a possibility. You can have community centers. You can have some programs to exclusion and to health, to education, small initiatives like you can have a van to transport people that have mobility issues, and that could be a project in one area. Another area, you can be working with a community kitchen, for example, as a response. So it's a very open program to different ideas, to different projects. The main thing that They have to respond to the issues in the community, have to emerge from the community themselves as a partnership to respond to that action they are promoting.
Looking specifically, if we can, at some of the urban design issues with Lisbon, during your presentation you mentioned a variety of spaces which may be underdeveloped in terms of public space, or overdeveloped, too crowded perhaps, or areas of neglect. For those who aren't familiar with the city, can you describe the sort of highs and lows of Lisbon's urban fabric, if you can?
I can give you a perspective, my own perspective of the city through my experience, that you have a city that has developed from centuries with some acceleration moments. And normally these areas that we are working on, BipZip, they are the areas that were on the back of the city. You can have some of these areas in the center, but they are mostly in the city limits. And it's kind of disconnect city areas. So it's the city, it's not fully developed in that areas. And normally when you have social housing or more deprived community in some areas, it has a physical kind of representation on lacking of some urban fixtures, because the
lack of services, lack of attention to detail,
the problems with mobility. It's kind of the city doesn't know well how to cope and invest and to get back that areas to the city grid. These last years have changed a little bit that idea. Starting with pinpointing that areas as priority areas, it's a shift point to the change. But the city has to understand that it's not only the areas that are more bright, because you have in the historical center also some areas that are not as seen. They are a little bit forgotten, but they are deprived also with social problems, with urban problems. So it's kind of a city. It's the city face, and you have the back of it, and we are working to bring the back to the light.
One such area in need of the light is the focus of the Oikonet research workshop. Bairro de Libertad is known as a tough area, a slum of sorts, home to low-income communities and the correlating social issues dwelling in high-density, haphazard, informal housing. It's also an example of citizen-led urban development lacking in planning and regulation. One Oikonet speaker, Antonio Brito Guterres, is a social outreach worker affiliated to the Aga Khan Foundation and champion of democratic design and citizen participation. His lecture focuses on contemporary examples of participatory design processes and how this democratic approach to design can solve complex urban problems. Antonio drives me to Bairro de Libertad to explore how this work can impact the community.
From the church down is where the neighborhood splits. One side, Serafina, which is this one, and in the other side, Libertad. So Libertad is down the hill. Mas no fundo, Libertad é a descer, Libertad é a parte de baixo, Serafina é a parte de cá cima.
Sim, sim, sim.
And on top of the hill is houses like this.
Yeah.
Yes. One floor, quite small, compact.
Yes, you have a small zone where there are buildings.
There.
Schools.
You see, this is the valley, this is, you can see clearly the...
That's an aqueduct, isn't it?
Yeah,
aqueduct.
It's from the 18th century.
What's it called, the aqueduct?
Aqueduct Aguas Livres, which means free waters. This is a split between Libertad and Serafina, you see?
Right.
You see immediately by the kind of house, it was... But there are still some strange things in Lisbon. First, there are neighborhoods. This part is important. We had rehouse, massive rehouse in the 90s. But after the revolution of 74, we had a project called SAL, which was a public project, during what we call revolutionary process, so in 75, was a public policy towards self-management in a way. The state could help with materials and people, together with the architects, also with a lot of activists from left-wing parties, went there and they built a lot of neighborhoods. Some of those neighborhoods that were self-built were then organized as co-ops. And what happened since then is a lot of them bankrupt. So what is strange, what is difficult, is that you have houses and neighborhoods that don't have any legal representation, because the co-ops went to bankruptcy and now you don't have like no one officially to represent them. And because you are a cooperative, you don't represent your own, but the whole neighborhood, you know? So that happened a lot also. You have some situations that you have this extra legal question, people could do second floor, etc., because no one, the city council don't want to go there because of political matters, because it's going to be tough. People sell the keys, you know, because they don't have the papers or because of the bankruptcy, they sell the keys to each other. I'm going to sell this house for you, so we sell the key. What also is happening, which is interesting, is that in some places, in Lisbon it's really difficult because it's strict control, but in some places you see, in some places of metropolitan area, you see some shit in towns appearing again after the crisis. Libertad starts here. Over here you see rehoused. Those I told you from the 90s, this is one of the examples.
For over six decades, Grundig has made people's lives better and simpler. To this day, we bring our expert knowledge of design and technology to a wide range of high-quality domestic appliances. Whether refrigerator or radio, oven or audio system, we continue to integrate our manufacturing heritage with state-of-the-art technology. Grundig synthesizes the best of yesterday with the best of tomorrow, expertly and innovatively designed for you and your home. Grundig. Supreme Engineering, Timeless Design.
In the first years of the industrialization era, the Bairro de Liberdad was created as an area for workers in the factory mills. The Liberdad area is more like a village within the city's perimeters, a world away from the grandeur of the new builds in downtown or the whitewashed marble of its historic center. Yet it's only a 5-minute drive away, atop the Alcantara Valley, once the home to Europe's biggest drugs bazaar and stain on Lisbon's urban record.
Okay. And then you see the landscape.
Completely different, yeah.
See?
And is there no interest from City Hall to try and sort of change it?
This is stores, you see all the art.
But is there no interest to change it, to normalize it?
Well, in a way, I think most...
The design.
The question of what happened here is that, besides families getting bigger and they want to put more families in the houses, so they build up or something like that. The other question is that things like kitchen and things like toilets were not in the houses. It was normal for people to put those places private. So that's what happened a lot. So in a way, city council through the years start to legalize it because, yeah, people are addressing health questions.
Addressing their own issues.
Yeah.
Antonio, could you explain exactly where we are, if you could describe, because we're amongst the roofs, but they're all different sizes, different heights.
Yeah.
We're on top of a lady, Teresa's apartment.
Yeah. We are in a patio. So it's a common space shared by some families. In this case, four families that live here. And we have a floor level, and we have this house of Teresa, which is in the first floor level. And we are in a small terrace right now.
It's probably 10 foot by 4 foot.
Yeah, it's really small. But the idea is to expand Teresa's house through here so that their two kids could have their own room. So one of the ideas of the project this week is try to, with all the technology, well, do the design with Teresa. And afterwards, try to do the project and to print in 3D panels, wooden panels, so we can really do.
So the project is actually going to develop physical change to the house. When will
it
happen?
Probably not this week, okay, but afterwards. Because one of the problems we have here is that when you officially want to do a thing like this, you have to do a proper project. And it's expensive. You have to pay architects to do the project. So in one hand, in this workshop, we could... Angela is saying what I'm saying, is that but we, with the workshop, we have the opportunity to really do the design and the project of this new room over here. Yeah, so, and then we can really deliver to the city council and to the parish a proper project, which will be for free for her. So in a way, that's a good step.
And that's entirely legal.
Legal, yes. But yeah, because I delivered the project...
to them, and then they approve in a way, and we'll build this. But we need to, nowadays, we need to deliver that project. Okay?
Yeah. If you could just explain in detail exactly why this kind of development is allowed, because it's a positive thing to be able to approach the city council with a ready-made plan, effectively.
But it's not really, really, really allowed. What people did through the years, they were adapt themselves. Because this kind of communities, they were left for their own interest. And you understand, for a lot of times, public policies, and in general, they didn't manage these places. The only thing they tried to do sometime when there was money was to rehouse people. Okay?
So rather than adapt the buildings.
Yeah, so in modern times, they say that this kind of house is not appropriate. So what is happening is they've done this for a lot of years, and because they were left apart from public policies, etc., they were managing to do this, and the local parishes, because they are more close to the people's needs, they close their eyes to things that were happening. Then afterwards, of course, when you want to register things, if someone from the city council comes here to see where you live, officially, is already like this, so they have to accept. Of course, if you want to do a new room or a new part, you have to legalize or deliver a project to legalize it nowadays. Nowadays, the control is much stricter. So the idea of the workshop, the main thing is that we'll do the project for free, and that's good, because normally it's expensive and people don't afford it, okay? So the project Arconet, this workshop, is to adapt new technologies to the needs and contemporary needs of dwellers. So,
and those technologies are 3D printing.
Yeah. 3D printing, CNC machines.
International cooperation between groups?
Yeah, because the students that are going to do this job over here, the project, are students not only from Lisbon, but from 15 cities, I think, or something like that.
Through the sheet metal door into another patio area, it's probably 5 or 6 houses within this space itself. Is around 50 to 40 foot, very thin though. The incongruity of the roofs, the shape of the houses changes with each residence. Everyone here seems to be over 60, 70 years old. And the toilets are all shared outside in the end, underneath a corrugated iron roof. In another patio, you have to go into the patios to be able to access the housing, inside the patios. How many people live here within this patio area?
3 or 4, I'll say. So, some of them are empty. I think this one is empty. We have the public toilets over here, common to all the patio.
Okay? There's toilets and showers down there.
Yeah.
So each house now has their own kitchen within the shacks. But these are solid structures. They've just been completely built organically, effectively. No real plan to them.
Yeah, but they are real structures.
They are actual solid structures, yeah.
One of the things they want to address is the toilets, because, and also up there, because it's too noisy when it rains. So one of the problems they asked us was to do something about that.
Yeah.
The toilets and the... Here is more private, but in some neighborhood in Lisbon, in Alvito, which is a neighborhood also around the Alcantara Valley, you have toilets in open air.
The corrugated iron roof.
Oh, yeah, it's falling apart, you know. The wooden stick are no longer... It's broken over there.
Yeah,
so she's afraid that when she goes to this toilet over here, up here, or when her neighborhood wants to get out, it can happen, falls apart.
So who would she call to fix that? Do they fix it themselves, or can she call the council to say, the roof which I've erected is falling down?
Imagine if she had like a son or someone, or youngster, that could help her. Yeah. I know her with this age, just one of the problems also in this neighborhood, people are really old. So.
They are very old. I've noticed that.
Yeah, so the question of self-management, everything we were talking about, in a way is in danger because they no longer have the strength and the... Okay?
So who fixes it?
The idea is, if you do the project, if you are here tomorrow, you can do some kind of good project, a cheap one, we can go to the local parish and try to fix it. Because this is really easy thing, in a way, compared to all the problems we have here.
Yeah.
Okay? So you have one neighbor there, one here. This is empty. I think this is the toilets.
Yeah. And this, the plumbing, the plumbing, the tubes for the toilet, the sewage, that's all connected.
Yeah. Yeah. And you have here another neighborhood, this one here. Mm. The last house on the left is the one from Giulietti we met outside.
Yeah.
Okay. Since the expo, you know, the 1998, there was this big expo.
that was like the timeline for the Lisbon Council, but in the metropolitan area, there are still some shanty towns. And a lot of rehouse. But the rehouse...
Where were they rehoused?
That's the question. When we were explaining the administrative concept of the metropolitan area, which is really divided in small councils, you don't have like this master plan for the metropolitan area. So what happens when you do rehouse, you rehouse in your own council. So what happened in Lisbon, city council, Lisbon, is when you rehouse, and you're going to see that, I'm going to show you. In fact, because of the lack of space, you rehouse just alongside the place where you were. Some exception as the one I told you about the bridge, that they built the bridge and then rehouse people in the other side of the city. But usually the rehouse of the 90s was done just nearby the shanty towns. But that's in Lisbon, because in the other councils around Lisbon, what happened is in the 90s, some of those places where the shanty towns were really center, next to train stations, near the sea, you know, really center places. So what happened a lot was they were rehoused in rural areas inside those councils with no lack of transportation. They did this brutal gap, economic gap, you know, people were used to be central to catch a train, to go to work, and now they stood really far away with, not
with no transport to take them there.
They were always rehoused inside their own councils, but you still had at those times a lot of councils which have really central areas and rural areas. So that's a good image of rehouses. It's always windy because it's always in the top of a hill somewhere, you know, lack of transportation, and because of the isolation, no services, sometimes no shops. Of course, there are some cases of success, but in general, that happens a lot. Yeah. But in Lisbon, in fact, because of the rule that you rehouse inside your council, all rehousing was just alongside the old shanty towns.
A careful balance between power and proportion is key to the success of Grundig's expert designs. The innovative Ovation Hi-Fi system radiates expansive sound from the most micro of machines. With its Magic Fidelity sound concept, the compact disc and iPod player is designed for the ultimate listening experience in your home, bringing big sound into small spaces. Grundig, supreme engineering, timeless design.
The Globalist provides insight and analysis of the key news and business stories in Europe and the Middle East. Informed, engaging, and authoritative, it's a 60-minute bulletin of news, features, and opinion. Two presenters in London are joined by guests in our studio and all around the world, including Monocle's editors and friends in our Hong Kong and Tokyo bureau. The Globalist also features an extended daily newspaper review with a special guest here in Midori House. And of course, we round up the business headlines with an expert analyst in a key city. All that and more every weekday at 6 a.m. London time on The Globalist. From the chaotic but collegiate community of Libertad, where houses morph into one another, overlapping through patios, terraces in varying degrees of semi-construction, I bid my thanks to Antonio Guterres and Sergio Oliveira and head to Portela de Sacavém with the Oikonet Research Group. In Portela de Sacavém, you have a neighbourhood born out of the city's modernist drive. Huge monuments of mass housing stand like obelisks divided by the grid of roads and green walkways. It is, in short, the opposite of Liberdad, and fittingly, it was constructed to house thousands of the middle and upper class.
Great to see you.
Into one of the housing estates we go, to reflect on the living arrangements as espoused by 1960s design, when there was some money in the coffers.
Enter, enter.
Come on. We have here the layout, just to have an idea. One thing is the original functions that they define here. The others, and you can think, I think you can see this, is how people do use, in fact, the space. And this is completely, usually this is completely different. So let's see, and then the area of the rooms. Here we have also a room, and originally the contractor, what he made, he put it one room there, the living room there, and another room there. So it's a little bit confused.
And the bathroom is not connected, so...
Yeah, well...
No window.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Like three bathrooms. So.
Yeah. Got no ventilation.
It has no ventilation.
No, the only one that doesn't...
Because it's natural here in Portugal, we in the old houses, we didn't have any ventilation. We had like small windows in the old houses, but it's sometimes the people that were living there, they made their own windows in the
facade. Not through the wall.
Yeah, yeah. When they could.
Yeah.
Great to see you. Great to see you.
Yeah, then it's like thinking as that big and like so many rooms.
Yes. So we have the dining room here near the kitchen, which is a small place because he divided that place, and he divided with another space, which is the living room that he put it between the rooms. This division does not make any. Well, I don't want to make any judges, but in fact, besides dividing the social area and the mixing social functions with private functions, because it puts the living room between the rooms, it introduces that aspect, more traditional aspect, which is the division between the living and the dining room that the modern housing had joined in the living room.
It's an example of an area defined by modernism, designed by Fernando Silva in the 1960s. At first glance, it seems a little bit affectless, a little bit anonymous. 12 floor high blocks, housing estates separated by large roads and not much communal space, not many services around, not many shops, you can't see many people interacting on the streets. That being said, anecdotally people have told me that the community is very strong here. Back in City Hall, Councillor for City Housing Paula Marques details the issues with the legacy of mass housing across the city and how the city's finances have coped.
In the last 15 years, we didn't have an investment of central government in social housing, neither to construct or to rehab. We do have financial programs to finance those kind of interventions, but it's more or less like going to the bank. It shouldn't be. The conditions to rehab or to construct social housing should be an exception from the capacity of allowing that municipalities have. And it's not an exception. So to go to those financial lines, it's the same thing to go to Central Europe Bank or to go to the private bank. The conditions are similar. So it's not a very interesting way of managing the city hall budget.
So how are you surviving with no budget?
No, we have a budget, but the budget is not as big as we would like to be to do more constructions. Not in the same scale that we have done in the 19th, because we are now managing the problem of the scale and the construction in higher.
Just describe to me before we continue what the problem with the mass housing was. What is the challenge for you in terms of the scale?
The scale is, it's hard to create communities, participating communities, to deal with social destruction with families that have low income, and nowadays they become lower the income. When you have a neighborhood with 9,000 people, it's hard. Even with 2,000, if you have a smaller scale, if the neighborhood has, for example, 100, 200, 400, 500, it's easier to create community, to create bonding with the people, than to have in the periphery a big house, mass housing neighborhood with 12 floors with 9,000 persons. It's hard to reach the people in that kind of scale. So what we are doing is we are projecting, trying to finance the construction of new houses, but in smaller scale. Yesterday, when we were in our seminar, the last project that I showed, tried to construct lower, not higher, lower.
Why not high?
Because you have difficulty to manage lifts, for example. Lifts is one of the most difficult equipment to manage in a public neighborhood. They are always damaged, and you have a lot of older people that live in higher, because they were not old when they went there, but nowadays they are older. And the problem is that if you don't have a lift working, how do the older people come down and get out of the house? So we're trying to construct and to project the new houses in lower heights with three, four, no more than four floors, and with design that can promote community between the neighbors. What we have is each 2 weeks we get together, we discuss about the progression of the project that we are implementing in the neighborhood, and if we find after the discussion that we have to change anything, we are open to change it. And this is not very easy because it's sharing the political power. It's a challenge for my generation, is that we are younger than the predecessors, so I think it's our responsibility to find other ways also of governments. And share the power is very, very difficult for everyone. These unities that we call GABIPS, and I will translate, so it's local support office to priority neighborhoods or priority zones that we have defined in the city. Nowadays we have six unities of that in different kinds of neighborhoods, municipal neighborhoods, illegal neighborhoods, neighborhoods that are not illegal, but informal neighborhoods that we are trying to become become with the legal support that they don't have. So we have those kinds of unities in municipality, public neighborhoods, historic neighborhoods. For example, here in the historical center in Moraria, we have one, GABIP, that is working with those partners and also other partners, other associations, other ONGs that are working in the field. It's a hard experience because it's a confrontation with the people, it's a confrontation with different kind of ideas, but it's also the result is that we have been changing some methodology, even methodology of resettle, for example, we have been changing it with the people. Yesterday, I was in a difficult assembly with 100 inhabitants. It's Pat Cruz. It's one of the biggest neighborhoods in the country. And so we have been working in a resettle, and they made me a proposition for changing some methodology, and yes, I am going to change it.
How do you think your generation has been influenced by the turn of Portugal's history, effectively, from Salazar to post-revolution status? Specifically, if you could talk about Lisbon and in terms of your ideas behind housing design, how do you think your ideas and your political background has been influenced by the change that has happened in Lisbon?
I'm 40 years old, so I'm a revolution child. And the post-revolution period concerning to housing, it was a very important period. We had some incredible experience about community building, projecting the houses with the community neighborhoods. In 75, 76, it called SAL. It was a local support program with engineers, with architects from the state government that were working and projecting and building the houses with the people. So I can say my ideals about how to design, how to plan the territories, I'm very influenced by those kind of ways of doing things.
What were the mistakes of that era?
I think the big mistake is that the program was shut down suddenly without finishing it.
And this program you're referring to, mass construction?
It was a mass construction, but because it was constructed with the communities, the scale of it was smaller. You see, the neighborhoods, the SAL neighborhoods, are completely different in scale of the other kind of construction and projecting without the persons. You can see they are smaller, they have more public spaces, they have more community spaces in the project in the beginning. So what I can say, the big mistakes, one of them, the program was shut down, as we say in Portugal, as an administrative decision. It was shut down and some of the projects didn't finish. They are not finished nowadays. They have not finished the programs.
And looking at Bairro de Liberdade,
yes,
the contrast between that and Portela de Sacavém that I was in today is obviously very marked. What as a councillor and a person in your position, what do you do with an area like Bairro de Liberdade? Do you deconstruct it? Do you leave it to grow organically as it is? When I was there yesterday, residents were complaining that their roofs were falling in, and I asked them, but you made the roof, so who takes care of it? What legal obligation does the city council have for that? And they said, none. So who is looking after the housing for that area?
The municipality, the city hall, has a legal obligation with all the property that is public.
So if you've built something privately, you have
the city hall
has no liability?
No. What the city hall can do, and we do, is to notify the landlord, because the notifying has to be to the landlord, not to the tenant. It's to the landlord. Sometimes the landlord is the person that lives in the houses, to make systematic interventions. And sometimes we do reach positive intervention, and in Bairro de Liberdade, for example, we do have a very big difficulty for the landlords to do the interventions. And because there is a terrible law that we have, is that if the houses, because it didn't have intervention during 10 years, 20 years, if the house come in a ruin, the contract between the landlord and the tenant is dissolves. So what happens sometimes is that the landlords do not make the intervention. Even if they are notified, sometimes they do make all the efforts they can for not doing the interventions, and because the rent is very low. So in the business way of thinking, for them, it's not rentable to make the intervention because the rent is so low that doesn't compensate the intervention. So this is a problem. What we have done sometimes, and we have done it in Bairro de Liberdade, is that in the lower part, that the houses were private, they were really falling down. So what we have done is that we made an intervention, public intervention. We resettled the people that were living in those houses in the same neighborhood, some of them, and other ones in the same area, but not in the neighborhood, because we didn't have enough public houses to resettle the people. And we demolished those houses. It was a very hard negotiation process. It didn't finish yet. We started to do it 4 years ago, and it didn't finish yet. The negotiation and the legal, some legal issues with the landlords. It's difficult when the municipality has no legal capacity of intervention directly in the houses.
Many of the residences that I saw yesterday in Bairro de Liberdade did not seem to have landlords. In fact, many of the residents I spoke to were constructing parts of their house as and when they wanted to, with no process of planning or regulation. What is the legal framework for housing where people are building on their own housing to create a second floor, a third floor, a new room?
They do have to
apply
to the city hall. Not to me, but to the other councillor that has urban planning and urban licensing. So they have to apply to do it. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. We don't have in our history, in our municipality history, interventions that demolish those kind of interventions. We do have other interventions, for example, in the city, in the center of the city, historical center, that people do make changes to the original plan, and they do change the houses. And because it's a protected area, if they don't apply to the city hall, and if the intervention is so out of the box, sometimes they do are notified to replace the intervention as it was before. But in informal neighborhoods, we don't have a history of notifying people to demolish, because what they are doing is to improve their quality, their accommodations, yes.
Lisbon, the sum of its many conflicted parts, struggles on with the impact of the global recession and the legacy of housing initiatives from the last five decades. City Hall is serious about the issue of urban design and community-centric change, with minimal money, the innovative work in the city's urbanist community. As displayed by former activist turned councillor Paolo Marx, architect Miguel Brito, and the BIPZIP programme, and Antonio Guterres' community engagement efforts, reveal how the city is dealing with its design in different and difficult ways. For Monocle, in Lisbon, I'm Alad John. This week's special edition was reported and produced by Alad John in Lisbon, his last ever manning the World Design Decks here at Section D. If you've got any comments or questions about the show, you can contact Alad at awj@monocle.com or me at tm@monocle.com. I'm Tom Morris. And in tribute to the city that played host to this week's show, this is a song from the Fado genre created on the streets, Lucura by Marisa. Thanks very much for listening. And thanks very much from me, and no doubt from you, to Alad John for his stellar turn getting Section D to you each week. Bye-bye.